what we set out to do is to outline the way that a health improvement council could work in the future. As this new agenda moves forward, there'll be key opportunities for councils to put health at the heart of everything they do. With a public health budget and a leading role in health and wellbeing boards, they'll be able to use a new democratic mandate and redesign services in a way that puts prevention as a priority and joins up services around the needs of citizens. This also comes at a time when there's diminishing resources and increasing demand for services. A recent report said that diabetes could actually bankrupt the NHS, but 4/5 of the potential spend is preventable. So there's an increasing urgency with the way that councils can take this agenda forward. However, there's a confident start to the new arrangements that are taking place. Our survey showed that the majority of respondents find the health and wellbeing boards will be effective in the next 1 to 2 years. At the same time, there's emerging challenges in the new system. Organizational differences were thought to be the key challenge going forward in this agenda, which is not surprising as organizational differences between NHS and local government have always been a key barrier in partnership working. However, also financial resources and leadership are the other two key barriers. As these health and wellbeing boards go forward and as councils take a lead in the agenda, it'll be important to outline their key role, which is both in strategic direction, resource allocation, and coordinating delivery across local government. They'll need to get the membership and governance right. So we found is it's not about getting everyone possible at the table, but actually creating a network with local government at the centre of it in the way that different stakeholders could be involved and engaged within the agenda. This is particularly prevalent in two-tier areas where there's not ways to directly link in every district council and has non-statutory duties. Involving the district councils will be incredibly important as they hold the key to a lot of the services that influence public health. However, this engagement of stakeholders is still at early stages. So what we found that shows is that the difference between the ambition for level of engagement and the current level of engagement is the largest for the general public. So there's still, as these are early, with the early implementers, there's still a gap in how the public are being engaged. The second biggest difference is in planning, which actually has a lot of impact over public health and over health outcomes. However, early implementers of health and wellbeing boards are still struggling to create direct involvement for planning directorates. Health and wellbeing boards will also require increasing use of pooled budgets and other resource reallocation mechanisms. There won't be much money in the new system, as everyone knows. Local government is taking cuts, and NHS will have to use existing resources widely. The health and wellbeing boards could be, the effectiveness of the health and wellbeing boards could be increased by pooled budgets. But at the same time, there's not sufficient incentives from central government to facilitate that integrated working. The results have come up with a set of recommendations, as Simon says, be things that are needed to give health and wellbeing boards more teeth and to give them harder powers so they can take the agenda of improving the population health forward. The first one of these is health and wellbeing deals, in which central government and local government arrange a deal to facilitate pooling, where this could include a small top-up from central government for a health and wellbeing board that comes up with a plan to pool budgets, as well as it could facilitate, you know, a reduction in organizational or administrative burdens that health and wellbeing boards will face in pooling their budgets. Second of these is a duty to cooperate, and this will facilitate health and wellbeing boards in engaging with the wider stakeholders. This will require public bodies to come to the table and have a conversation in a way that improves public health outcomes. Similar with that, call and power for the health and wellbeing boards, board of directors that are commissioning services with influence over public health. Another one of our recommendations is that prenuptial agreements between health and wellbeing board members. Some of you might find this slightly strange, but it's about facilitating some of the difficult conversations around resources that some health and wellbeing boards across the country are struggling to have, because obviously during a time of cuts. So a prenuptial agreement could set out the willingness of each board member in terms of both resource, any kind of commitment for their agenda going forward. The other two are direct scrutiny, district scrutiny of county health and wellbeing boards, which would allow districts to produce an annual scrutiny report of their county health and wellbeing boards. All this is obviously not necessary. We think this will facilitate counties to engage district councils in the agenda, in the priority setting, and developing the joint health and wellbeing strategy. Lastly, most of all, we think for this agenda to be successful, there needs to be an explicit strategy for public involvement. At the heart of this lies a democratic mandate for health, and the local population will need to hold politicians accountable for the health of the place. So with an explicit strategy, health and wellbeing boards will be able to set that out. So if you've got any questions.